Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129. Now back to America This Week, live with Father Matt Malone and Carrie Weber.
Welcome back. You're listening to America This Week. I am Carrie Weber here with Father Matt Malone, and we are speaking with our friend and colleague Robert David Sullivan about Catholics in Congress, Catholics in politics, and you are welcome to join the conversation as well. You can give us a call at 1-888-322-8465. That's 1-888-3-CATHOLIC. Robert, I don't know if you read this interview in The Atlantic with Michael Weir by Emma Green, and he was a former director of Barack Obama's 2012 faith outreach efforts. And he writes about his experience doing that and about the sort of lack of awareness of religion that he sort of met with in his efforts there. And I wonder if some of that sort of influences some of that is exists in the general public and influences people's impressions of how politicians sort of live out faith and what it means to be a person of faith, because people are just less familiar with faith as part of the general culture, I think, in some ways than it used to be. Like, I think Communities used to be, at least in the Catholic Church, based, you know, very parish based or very, you know, and it was all sort of tied up in that, and that's no longer the case. There's one interesting example that he gives in this interview, just in terms of the vocabulary, where he is writing a memo, and it's called like Economic Policy and the Least of These, referencing the least of these that Jesus references in the Gospels, and someone comes back and crosses it out and says, who are the least of these? Is this a typo? What does this mean?
Right.
And I wonder what you think about the way that sort of faith is perceived in our culture today, and how that influences the way politics works in Congress.
Yeah, I think there is kind of a cynicism about our religion that is, part of a general cynicism about politics and in general, and people kind of thinking, oh, it's just for show. And a lot of the more vocal people who are more vocal about their faith are not necessarily the ones who are the best representations of that faith. And there are some politicians that are kind of more, I don't want to say showboaty, but I guess I just did. And I'm not specifically speaking about Catholic politicians here, but I think kind of with the rise of the religious right in the 80s and people like Pat Robertson, people started to associate religion with a very particular mindset. There's some data to this effect, too, that a lot of Democrats or liberal-leaning voters are now more likely to say that they are not affiliated with any religion. And when they did follow-up questioning, they're like, well, but religion means this. Religion means Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell telling people what to do. And there hasn't been as much from people who are not necessarily in that tradition, but are from more of a faith-based tradition in terms of social justice, who I don't think they're as vocal. And we didn't see a lot of that. Haven't seen a lot of that in Democrats lately. They've kind of said, oh, that's something personal. That's something I don't want to address. Or they just don't use that kind of language. And I think that has kind of boomeranged on them in a lot of recent elections.
Listeners can join the conversation at 888-322-8465. We're talking about Catholics in politics, Catholics in the U.S. Congress, and Jean is on the line from Texas. Hello, Jean.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
Well, I just turned on the Catholic Channel, and I was glad to hear this conversation because I think it's been lacking a little bit. I am a cradle Catholic. I come from a family that has had priests, monsignors, and My aunt was a Catholic nun for 83 years.
Wow.
And in my opinion, the Democratic Party was the party of the Catholics years ago. But as mentioned a little bit earlier that I just heard you speaking of, when during the debates of this year, it was mentioned that it was okay to have a late term abortion at 36 weeks, I sat and cried. And I was appalled that there wasn't an outrage to protect the innocent and the babies. And I waited for my parish priest or somebody to say something on that subject, and nothing happened. And that's when I started looking into what has happened to the Democratic Party, where has it gone, what has it become, and why are things polarized.
Yeah. Jean, were you a registered Democrat at one point?
No, I had, my grandfather was, and, you know, I've lived through the Kennedy era where the Catholics, you know, came to the scene. But I think after the abortion issue, you know, that's where I draw the line. If you can kill a baby, then I don't care what party it is, I will not tolerate it. And I will stand up for the unborn because they can't speak for themselves.
All right. And, well, Jean, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Well, and I had one other question.
Oh, sure.
What I wanted to know was at what point, because I am all about women's rights and the women taking care of themselves, and that it stops when she becomes pregnant and there's two people. So how can I, you know, be a part of the movement but yet still be a conservative Catholic? And it seems to be that we're pushed out of that, and it just, you say I'm for women's rights and automatically somebody throws you into a liberal conversation.
So you know
the other thing is, I now as a conservative, I do care for the poor. We do care for the poor. We do things for the poor. We support programs. We donate money to programs to where we give a helping hand up and not always a hand out. And I understand that's important. So at what point does it become an issue of helping people to better themselves?
Sure.
And, you know, what can we, you know, as Catholics do about that?
Okay, Jean. Well, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. And Carrie, this is, of course, a topic that we've written a lot about in America. And in fact, I think we just posted on social media again today a piece by the president of Feminists for Life, because it's a lot of women feel like she does, that, you know, that they're feminist, they're sympathetic to the you know, the call to empower women and to provide for social justice and support them in their choices, but are also pro-life.
Yeah, I think that our caller would be consoled to know that some of the first wave feminists were also pro-life. Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, these women were against, you know, they were against slavery, they wanted women to be able to vote, and they were against abortion because they saw it as the same kind of violence and atrocity that a lot of women and men see it as today. And there's actually an article in, so we have the article in America about the feminist case against abortion, and that's talking about feminism. I think the part of the problem comes in is how people end up wanting to define feminism, and this is a elusive term, but Sarah Foster says that it's a philosophy that embraces basic rights for all human beings without exception. So without regard to race or religion, sex, size, age, location, disability, parentage, and it rejects this use of force to dominate, control, or destroy anyone. And to destroy an unborn life is against this principle, this sort of first principle of feminism. And there's an article in the Washington Post today, actually, by the Susan B. Anthony, the president of the Susan B. Anthony Foundation. I'm not sure if I have that quite right, but basically saying Susan B. Anthony also was pro-life, and she, her paper, The Revolution, wouldn't accept this sort of subtle advertising for abortions that other papers would have done, and that she would have been appalled that this debate was going on at this level of sort of vitriol around the Women's March and all of these things.
Mm. And Robert, what do you think, who do you think is, I know this is an almost impossible question to answer, but at a macro level, but which party is more tolerant? Is it Democrats vis-a-vis pro-life Democrats or Republicans vis-a-vis pro-choice Republicans? What do you think?
I think there's probably a little more tolerance among the Republicans just for pro-choice members simply because that's kind of where the money is. I think at the elite level and in media centers like New York, there's kind of a bipartisan pro-choice consensus at a certain social circles. So I think at that level...
I'm a members of the political class.
Members of the political class, members of big donors, mm-hmm. The people who bundle a lot of contributions, I think there's probably more tolerance for a pro-choice Republican than a pro-life Democrat.
But this can't possibly be healthy for our civic culture to have a lack of to really have a lack of tolerance in both parties. I mean, where you know, the diversity within the party itself, or lack thereof, is problematic, isn't it?
It is, and it's I don't know what the Democratic Party is going to do about it. I think some listeners might know that our office is like one block from Trump Tower.
That's right.
And so I've gone over there a few times after the election where there have been demonstrations. And it's this weird thing where it starts off with as this very broad-based demonstration, and they're chanting about abolishing the Electoral College and immigration reforms. But every time I've gone... At some point, it really becomes a pro-choice rally. Mm. My body, my choice. Keep your hands off my body. And that's the dominant view in the Democratic Party, and that's not going to change for a long time, if ever. But it did strike me that it was interesting to see this rally that started off as this let's all unify, and then it kind of got narrower and, yeah. and kind of fixated on this particular issue, and I've seen it happen a lot. And I think it's a real organizing dilemma for the Democratic Party in terms of them now being the opposition party and the resistant party, because they're kind of hemming themselves in on the kind of participation they're asking.
Right. Well, it breaks my heart how quickly people are willing to label somebody else as the enemy, as that other, as you hold that view, and therefore X, Y, and Z must be true about you in a way that just does not enable people to come together in any kind of unified way, because they're always an enemy. They're always an other. There's always a fight. There's always a struggle.
Right. There's always a suspicion of the other, of now it's so partisan, but there's a suspicion of the other side, and there's all this evidence where people of one party change their opinion on an issue because it becomes associated with the other party. And there's kind of just a walled-off attitude that if they're for it, I must be against it. And I know abortion is not quite the same way in that I think most people have genuine moral convictions on it. But it does, as you say, make people more likely to kind of say, you know, that person is part of this other side, and there's nothing I can learn from this person.
Hmm. Well, we've been talking about Catholics in Congress and Catholics in politics, and also the number of people who have some affinity with the Jesuits who are serving in Congress. And there is actually a Jesuit in Congress. He is the chaplain of the U.S. House of Representatives, and we conducted an interview with him about a couple of months ago, and it's appearing in this January 23rd issue of America. When we come back after the news summary, we're going to hear a bit from that interview. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Number 5. The president of the U.S. Bishops' Conference has said he's hopeful that the new Congress and administration can bring about comprehensive immigration reform. Cardinal Daniel DiNardo was speaking during National Migration Week, where he said the intense debate on immigration in the coming months is ultimately about treating everyone with respect, regardless of religion. Archbishop Jose Gomez of Los Angeles also said the Bishops' Conference is trying to start a conversation with the transition team of the president-elect to continue to help elected officials understand the issue.
Number four.
U.S. bishops have expressed disappointment with President Obama's decision to end the longstanding policy that grants residency to Cubans who arrive in the U.S. without visas. The repeal followed months of negotiations and was praised by the Cuban government as an important step in advancing relations between the two countries. Bishop Joe Vasquez of Austin, Texas, said the U.S. bishops welcomed normalizing relations with Cuba, but also noted that the violation of basic human rights remains a reality for some Cubans and that the policy had helped people to seek refuge in the U.S. He said the protections given to Cubans in the past were a model of humane treatment.
Number three.
Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York will read from Scripture at Donald Trump's inauguration on Friday. Speaking last week, he acknowledged that he had received some criticism for his decision to speak, but said that religious leaders are in the sacred enterprise of prayer and that praying for someone does not have to mean you are for or against them. Cardinal Dolan has chosen Wisdom Chapter 9, in which King Solomon prays for wisdom to lead Israel according to God's will. Cardinal Dolan will also be in Washington, D.C. on January 27th to speak at the annual March for Life rally. He'll be joined by other speakers, including Trump's former campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway.
Number two.
Cardinal Sean O'Malley of Boston has been appointed as the newest member of the Vatican's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. Cardinal O'Malley is already a member of the Pope's Council of Cardinals and president of the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors. The cardinal's appointment means there's now a direct link between the commission and the CDF, which deals with all cases of the abuse of minors by clergy, as well as bishops who are negligent in their duty to protect children. Cardinal O'Malley becomes the second U.S. residential cardinal on the CDF, joining Cardinal Donald Wuerl of Washington.
Number one.
Pope Francis has laid out priorities for diplomats accredited to the Vatican, including social injustice, religious freedom, the arms trade, climate change, and immigration. In a speech to the diplomats, the Pope denounced ideologies that exploit social unrest in order to create contempt and hate. His speech came days before Palestine opened a new embassy to the Holy See. Speaking at the Vatican on Saturday, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas thanked Pope Francis for his support, saying it's a sign that the Pope loves the Palestinian people and loves peace. The Vatican said Pope Francis and President Abbas spoke privately about the contribution of Catholics in Palestine along with the peace process, expressing hope that direct negotiations might help to bring peace.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.